Welcome to Novo Ed Talks, where we reveal real-world strategies and expert insights from learning and development professionals. In every episode, we chat with practitioners, course designers, learning strategists, and business leads. We hear about their experiences in the learning industry and predictions for the profession and the trends that they're seeing. But before we get started, a little bit about Novo Ed. Founded at Stanford's Social Algorithms Lab in 2012, Novo Ed is a people-centric, capability-building platform that combines social and collaborative learning to drive performance readiness at scale. Through cohort-based experiences centered around human interaction, Novo Ed taps into collective wisdom, placing each learner at the center of perspective, application, and expertise. Large enterprises such as 3M, GE, Marriott International, and Nestle partner with Novo Ed to accelerate their critical initiatives, reconnect teams, and achieve rapid alignment through learning that is felt, experienced, and swiftly transformed into impact. Now, let's meet our guest for today's episode.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Novo Ed Talks podcast, a space for training trailblazers to get real. My name is Melissa Fisk. I am the producer and today's host of the Novo Ed Talks podcast. And today I am joined by Ryan Riley, who is the Senior Director of Business Development at Sandler. Sandler is a Metro New York-based company that focuses on executive sales leadership, sales management, and the sales process itself. He has coached, trained, and mentored sales management teams in addition to executive sales leaders on the Sandler methodology, helping his clients extract the growth and profitability they are seeking. Ryan, welcome to Novo Ed Talks.
Thank you, Melissa. Hey, folks. Happy to be here.
Awesome. Well, why don't you start by just kind of expanding upon that bio a little bit and talking about yourself, your role in the company.
Sure. Nothing better than talking about yourself to start off, right? So for me, I started off as an educator. It was always about helping others, right? Figuring out how to be that person for somebody else. And in education, I first started off as a high school teacher and then moved into special ed as well as a vocational counselor as my niche. So it was, again, always about figuring out strategies and solutions for the next thing, how to get better and help them get better. That kind of morphed into sales eventually, because all of us at one point or another in our life fall into sales. And at that point, I did that for a long time before realizing that it wasn't what I needed to do. It was what I wanted to do that I really needed to chase. And sales was fun, but teaching was where my passion was. So I came back to it. And now, full circle from teaching to sales, now I teach sales and help that out. So it's, again, back to helping others. It's a great life to live.
That's awesome. I love that. And I love when people have like very, you know, intentional journeys of how they got to what they are and what they're doing. So why don't you talk a little bit about who your learners are on a day-to-day basis and maybe what some of their biggest challenges are?
Sure. So for us, we work with business owners, sales managers, and sales professionals. Typically for us, people are dealing with the same challenges that all of us are dealing with, really, is figuring out, are we getting enough of the right behaviors on a regular and consistent basis in order to reach our goals? Are there issues within the company where either we're a little bit shy of the goal or we're just having some lackluster results and wondering, is there something that we're missing, whether it's a behavior, an attitude, or a technique? Is there something that the company can work on? So most of our learners are relatively successful. They're already in a business where they're working towards their goals. And what they're realizing is that there may be something else out there that they're missing, a methodology or something that we can help put in place to help them get to their goals.
That's awesome. And so kind of how do you approach those challenges? Like if they do realize that like something is missing, like how do you kind of take that from step one on?
I think everything is different, right? The worst answer ever is it depends. However, it always depends. It's the solution is not a box solution. It's not about me or about Sandler at all. It's about them. So first it's understanding what those issues are, because although I can say that sales is sales and every business is the same, has the same challenges. Also, every business is different and sales is not sales. So First, it's about understanding and having them get to the recognition of where that challenge is so that we're actually teaching and learning together on the right subjects or the right problems so that we're finally getting to that. I guess the thing that they're chasing is always going to be that success, right? But success looks different for everybody, Melissa. So what we find is let's define success first. Let's define the challenges, and then we'll work together to fit something in that works for you.
I love that. I love that kind of like customized approach to that.
Right.
With the rise of remote work and virtual collaboration, and in some ways, I think sales is probably a little bit more adjusted to this because in a lot of instances, they've been doing remote work for a while there. But how has your approach to learning and development kind of adapted for your sales folks to ensure that, you know, employees are going to get the right skills they need in this new kind of like digital workplace?
Yeah, that's a great question, and one that's been top of mind since really COVID accelerated everything into this digital world. So let me break that down a little bit. First, it's about understanding who you have on the other side of the line, who your learners are, and their capabilities of adapting to the virtual world. If they're not able to adapt, we still see the hybrid model working well, right? Doing some on-site, working with them in person, as well as supplementing with some online learning. So we have a learning management system that they can go on and do on their own time, depending on how they learn, as well as I do right now, about 90% of my training right here in this room on this computer. What we found there is that engagement is key. So understanding that Sandler itself as a corporation really saw the path before COVID happened that we were going to start going virtual because it's all about efficiency and effectiveness when it comes to sales. Now, the old school way was your sales professionals left the building. They went to get coffee and then they went to their sales training class and then they went and get lunch. So it was a 3-hour thing for a 1-hour class. Now they're at their desk, they get to learn and then start implementing right away. However, that hour that they're with us, that has to be an engaging hour. You need to be able to pull people through the screen, understanding that cameras are a really great portion of that. I love to see the smile. I love to see the eyebrow go up when they like something or to pull back when they don't like something. All of those verbal and nonverbal cues can only be seen through camera. So if we're not in person, that engagement level has to be driven by the trainer.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I love that you say that because it seems like just paying attention to that, like people's responses to things, like how important that is, like, especially in a digital environment, because you can tell, you know, when someone's like checked out, when someone's doing something else on their other screen, like you can see that. So very, very important.
Remember, I came from the high school world. So nobody in that classroom wanted to listen to me. I had to figure out ways to pull that in and I utilize those now.
Yeah, absolutely. That probably makes you like so much more intuitive and kind of like tuned into that. Awesome. But besides being, you know, intuitive and in tune to that, how do you kind of identify and address skills gaps within, you know, organizations, within classes, within programs?
So there's several different ways to do it. Obviously, observation is one of the strongest tools we have. Sitting down and listening to sales calls, listening to their process and the way that they go about sales is a huge tool that we have. And that can be done both in person and virtually by several tools. I mean, there's, I don't know, a handful to 40 of them maybe of recording tools and AI bots that can be implemented. So those are always going to be in play. However, the other part of that is starting off the engagement with a benchmarking. So a survey or a pain primer that we can use to be able to have them look internally, both at themselves and their organization. Therefore, kind of grading themselves on, you know, something simple like a scale of 1 to 10. How well do you do prospecting and see where they land? It's funny how many times in an organization, if you give it to 20 people, the varying ideas of what people think they have as opposed to what they actually have. And that's how we benchmark it. Most of the time that survey goes out or that pain primer sheet goes out well before we start the engagement so that we really kind of have a better picture of what we're looking at. I think this goes back to the beginning of our conversation, right? Identify the challenges first as it relates to that learner. and then identify what the strategy for success is.
Yeah, absolutely. So is that what you talked about there, your like pain primer sheet? Is that kind of what you use to measure the effectiveness of your programs, or do you have other kind of core KPIs that you're using?
Well, when it comes to KPIs, really, I think what happens with KPIs is people look at what the end result is too many times. What I'm looking at is the behaviors that are going to get us to that end result. So yes, a benchmarking in the beginning starts us off with a point of advantage, right? If they're at a 4, getting them to a 5, a 6, a 7, an 8, that's obviously the trajectory that we want to get to. However, there are other KPIs that are put into place, and that comes down to like accountability coaching, making sure that we have specific behaviors that we're following. And we know through success and through experience that if we complete those behaviors on a regular and consistent basis, that they will lead to other KPIs that then we can see the intermediate results and the final results. I mean, I personally have them on my board right here. These are my behaviors or KPIs that for myself. And every day I go back with my red marker and I check them down. And every week I go ahead and erase them. We would always say that you can't manage numbers. You can only measure numbers, but you can manage behaviors. So that's what we concentrate on, the behaviors that will lead to the success.
I love that. That's such a good quote. Can you share a successful case study or an example of an initiative that you've done that has significantly impacted employee performance?
Sure. It's a difficult question. To pinpoint one, more recently, as of yesterday, I had somebody come to me, and first they wrote me an email and they said, "Ryan, I want to tell you a story where you were the devil on my shoulder." And I went, I said, "I'd prefer to be the angel on your shoulder, but please tell me about it." She said, can I set up a meeting later on today and I can tell you about it?" So I said, sure. One of the things that we do is we teach DISC profile assessments, not only to understand who you are as a professional and as a person, your personality style, but also to identify others that you're dealing with, to understand that people like people who are like them and they buy from people who they like. So what she did was she walked into a networking event and somebody right away, she said, "I saw your face, Ryan, and it said, identify this person as they were a high D, which means they were dominant, they were overtaking." And she adjusted her style and the way that she answered the questions for this person, and she broke through a wall. In her words, she said, "I would have failed at this relationship if I did not have that training behind me to understand who am I dealing with." Because what happened was the lady asked her a question. And what she did was a classic Sandler move. She didn't answer the question. Instead, she reversed it by really kind of massaging it, saying, "That's a great question. Tell me more about why you've asked that." And right there, the person's guarding went down. And she had a 20-minute, half-hour conversation with this prospect who now is in their pipeline because she understood it. When on the other side of it, if she did not have that training, she probably would have answered the question. And the question was, "Tell me about why your company is better than others." Of course, that sounds like an opening for me to start giving features and benefits. She didn't do that. She stepped back for a second, in her words, saw the devil on her shoulder. I'd prefer the angel again, but it worked. And she brought that story to me yesterday, and I was all smiles. I love a good success story like that. And that's something simple that little tiny changes can absolutely impact your full success.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like you're in such an awesome kind of place too, where you're really dealing with people to people, which that's something obviously that maybe not obviously, but it's something that I really enjoy and love that aspect of my career and my job is just like getting to know people, but to teach other people how to do that, you know, is very, very difficult. So to have like such a poignant, like example of how that came through on your end is super awesome. What obviously, you know, you do, we talked a lot about like, well, not a lot, but we talked about how you do, hybrid experiences. You know, you do most of your training there. But what role does technology play in your programs? Do you leverage certain tools and platforms that you find, you know, really helpful that enhances your programs?
Sure. And I want to start by saying I don't sell any of these programs, but I will give them a nod. So there are note-taking programs that have saved me, and I've done the math on this, somewhere close to about 110 hours a year. I have one running right now on this meeting, and they make me look like a rock star. So I love something that makes me more efficient. And note-taking for me used to take me, let's say, 30 minutes to recap a meeting, draft an email, send it to the CEO. Now, when I'm working individually coaching individuals on a team, I have my note taker running, and that automatically recaps the meeting with takeaways and action items that I can then forward directly to their manager and or CEO, and they see what's happening in our training sessions. So that's a phenomenal tool. That one is called Fathom. There is about 10 other tools that we use. Another tool that we see in technology is for the learning and development is our learning management system. So Sandler Corporate has developed their own personal learning management system, and that has even bots that are in there. You can go and track your own self in your learning development, as well as if you don't understand something, there's a multiple tools like an AI bot where you can literally practice a sales pitch in it, and it will talk back to you. It'll give you hints or tips on where to get better, as well as identify areas that may have been a challenge for you, and then identify the opportunities that you can possibly get better by utilizing the Sandler methodology. So it is an encompassing learning management system that allows the learner to learn on their own pace, not just. Not everybody listens when you're in a class, right? And we know that. Learning from virtual or even in person, it's sometimes you don't catch everything. So having the recording that's always going, having those notes that come to you, as well as having the ability to go to a learning management system and recheck yourself, redefine or reinforce, that has been key for us. I could go on for hours about other technology things, but you tell me if you'd like to know about any others.
Yeah, no, that's super interesting. I like that you guys have that piece. That's so helpful. I feel like I could use that just in everyday life talking to everyone. It's like, hey, critique how I handle this conversation. You talked a little bit about like the AI note-taking, but while we're still on this technology question, do you have like other aspects of AI that are playing into your programs?
So we have several different programs that we utilize that I suppose makes the actual seller's journey a little bit easier. And we implement those, we promote those. Some things like Umantic AI, which is a program that runs, it's a social media scrubber and can tell you who you have on the other side of the phone before you even get on the phone with them. So before jumping on a sales call, you can understand their personality style, the way that they like questions asked, even some talk tracks in order to win and avoid being based on their personality that has been scrubbed from social media. So that's one company that we utilize. That's Umantic AI. Other programs that we utilize here are things like Zoom and understanding that Zoom is not just video. Right, using the whiteboard feature so that people can interact with the learning, or using the features on Zoom like what's it called? Annotation. So that's another way to engage learners. They're actually drawing or writing on the screen, engaging with the learning so that they're not just sitting back and listening. I always say that talking to people is no fun. Talking with people is a ton of fun. And that's how I approach learning. But that technology has to be a part of that at all times.
Yeah, absolutely, especially in a digital world to help facilitate. That's awesome. Thank you for sharing that. I definitely want to check out that Humantic AI. That sounds like such a cool tool.
It's crazy.
Thinking about just kind of the industry in general, and with everything that's kind of changed in the past 5 years or so, what are some key takeaways that you've seen?
Some key takeaways. As far as, could you be a little more clear on what you're looking for there?
Sure. Just like key takeaways about, like with the shift to maybe a more digital environment, more hybrid environment, what have you seen as like some core takeaways that folks should maybe like keep in mind or that are important to note, like with these?
Gotcha. So I think that in person is never going to go away. So understanding that you still need to get out there. You still need to get in front of people in certain aspects of your business. And that's all businesses. Hiding behind the computer at all times is not healthy for us or for anybody else. So that relationship still relies on us. The same thing goes for AI. And it's funny, I do a lot of AI is hot right now. So we do a lot of speaking engagements where we talk about AI. And recently I wrote something on the board and I said, what is HI? And nobody in a room of 120 people knew what HI was. And I said, this is human intelligence. And AI is only driven by human intelligence. So for us, I always say AI is not to make your life easier. And this is a key takeaway here. AI is to make you more successful, which means more work, better behaviors, and more intentionality of use. That takes extra. You need to put in extra, that heavy lift in the beginning, in order to get out the production that you want later. So AI is not a tip and trick to go real fast to it. Although it will help you in the long run, maybe to get more efficient, it takes some time in the beginning. And that takes us, that human interaction, to really drive it. So those are two really key takeaways as it relates to technology. Another thing that is a key takeaway for me in the wide span of things is people need to stop taking themselves so seriously.
I love that.
You do. I think it's time to look in, and what we've done as a society, which is awesome in business, is we've stopped this, it's me and I need to do this on my own thing. That old world entrepreneurs can always do it on their own and they're going to make it by their own sweat of their back. That's not a thing anymore. We've created a society where asking for help and leaning on each other and understanding that when you're struggling, talking about it is something that can help everybody. That has become my world. Community-based understanding and community-based success, really leaning on everybody else and being a little vulnerable, telling people when I'm not doing so well or I'm struggling in a certain area. And the biggest statement of my life, I need help. It's tough to get there. It used to be looked down upon. Now we've created a society that you're allowed to ask for help. And that's how people are getting to success now. So that, I think, is the hugest takeaway I've learned over the last 5 years or so.
Yeah, absolutely. You can see that. And COVID, I think, did do wonders for that, because it was like all of a sudden we were in everyone's homes and like you were in these like small apartments where there's kids and dogs and pets. Like, you know, obviously that's the very easy anecdote to point to. But I think, you know, with that too came like, hey, you know, I'm here, I'm struggling with X, Y, and Z because I've been like forced into this situation. Like, how can I get out of that? And I think what people have recognized is that it actually makes the business as a whole stronger, because it's like, oh, hey, I'm not going to give you this project. You just told me you're having like the worst week of your life. I'm not going to give you this new like project to take on and spearhead, because it's probably going to fall flat, like based off of that, you know, like I'm going to do, like as a manager and a leader, I think that's really like the vulnerability aspect when your team feels like they can be like that with you has actually really helped businesses do well. So I love that. I love all those takeaways though. I think that's great.
Talking about leadership, I think that's been a big turn as well. And you just nailed it, that it's our job as leaders or managers to create an atmosphere that allows people to think that way, that allows people to be there and be vulnerable, because otherwise they'll be scared. They'll take the project on anyway, and it will fall flat on its face. So it's our job to understand our people and then understand how to value and support them. And I think that's key.
Yeah, absolutely. I think your takeaways are spot on. And I think they're, you know, like very true for in this moment in time. And I think more and more folks are going to realize those as we move forward. Is there anything that you would kind of add to that, you know, that you see kind of shaping the future of the industry moving forward? You know, any kind of emerging tech trends or things that you want to expand upon?
Well, I think no matter what, AI is never going to replace sales professionals. But sales professionals who use AI will replace those who don't. Yeah. So I think being an early adopter is something that is key. Understanding what's in front of you first. Sandler would always say that the first step to improvement is awareness. So being aware of all of these, you can't kind of, there's no longer the opportunity to say, well, I do it this way or I do it old school. You almost need to be on the forefront of it, especially as an educational and learning and development company. We need to make sure that we're staying ahead of the curve you may not adopt it. You may decide that it's not good for you or good for your clients, but being aware of it so that when it does come up, I think is key. So that, as far as technology goes, that's always my thing is, again, it won't replace you, but people who use it will replace you. The
Yes.
second part is hybrid, right? If we're going to be home, we need to understand that home doesn't mean laundry in the back and having a messy room or anything like that. I believe that professionalism is alive and well. I'm in shorts right now. I always wear shorts. I wear t-shirts every once in a while. But this is my office. I've curated this office for me so that it looks the way I want it to look. Some people like the virtual background, others don't. But creating a space for yourself is going to be key in hybrid work. And that really goes to that professionalism again. And on the same note, I believe in the future, Melissa, we're going to see the office coming back a little bit more. And I know nobody likes to hear that, but there's an entire generation that had their high school prom ripped out from under them, had their college experience ripped out from under them. They're craving the structure and the community that was always what business was. So I see that they're going to want that more office, not every day, maybe 3 days a week, but I believe that that's going to come back stronger and people have to be ready for that as a business because we're moving to this virtual world and now it's kind of sliding back. I believe we're going to see that continue to grow as this new generation of owners, business professionals, and professionals come into play.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's something that actually has come up on this podcast a lot with folks like just this year, where it was like, okay, yes, we have to do everything digitally. So we can do everything digitally, during COVID. And
Right.
then it was like, okay, wow, we were able to kind of like do everything. This is kind of nice to be at home. But now it's kind of like backing up even further to be like, okay, but we actually kind of miss parts of this, And I think
Our cooler conversations were great.
I think more and more people are starting to really just focus on like that the hybrid piece of that, where it was like some companies were like, oh, well, we have to stay hybrid because we need people in the office. But now it's more of a like we want to stay hybrid because it's what people want. It's not necessarily even what like the corporation or the big execs want. It's like
Right.
what we
People
as
are the culture, and the culture needs to be together every once in a while.
Absolutely. We kind of started touching on this, but this is always my favorite question to ask. As a fun send-off, what advice would you give to those just stepping into a leadership role?
Just stepping into a leadership role. So we did touch on that a little bit. Don't take yourself so seriously is always my key. But also, the moment that you are telling people what to do rather than asking them what they want to do is the moment that you forgot what you are as a leader and you become what's called a boss. Nobody likes a boss. A leader is leading. That means they are able to follow you. So I always go back to like professional sports. Think of a leader, Bill Belichick, maybe from the New England Patriots. It's a huge, right? I mean, I'm not a Patriots fan, but if you look at that organization, there's not a single day where he said, "Hey, Tom Brady, let me step on the field and show you how it's done." He never did that. What he did was lead him by supporting him. What do you need, Tom, in order to be successful here? How else can the team and the leadership support you? That's what real leadership looks like. You're never telling people what they should do. You're understanding what they need in order to get their job done. That's the identity of a professional. If you hire professionals, they're adults. They know or they should know what it's done. And if they don't know, then it's your job to set the expectation. So, as a new leader, understand that it's your job to be super, absolutely no joke, clear on what the expectations are. And if that's clear, everything else should fall into place. You decide what the what is, how they're going to get there, the what, the how, and the why, that's on them to decide. You click the what, they do the how and the why.
Absolutely. I love that. I think that's so important and such a simple thing, right? Clear expectations. Yet it is not that
No.
simple and it's not like it's not always done and done well, but like if you can get someone to understand to know what the expectations are and make sure that they understand those expectations, I think is such a great piece of
My
advice.
favorite way to do that is pull out your inner 4-year-old. And I have young boys. So the inner 4-year-old will ask yourself what question every single time. Why? So every time you put on that, ask yourself why 4 or 5 times. If you can't answer that why 4 or 5 times, nor can your people, and there will be some miscommunication. So pull out your inner four-year-old and understand why you're putting that goal, that objective, that initiative into play.
That's a great quote. You could use that as a kind of headline.
Pull it's all out. Yours.
Awesome. Ryan, thank you so much for your time today. It has been an absolute pleasure having you on.
I appreciate you. Thank you so much for having me.
And thank you to our listeners for tuning in once again to NovoEd Talks.
Cheers, guys.